Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 66 featuring Blagoves Taskov, who is Lon. Lon's joining me for the podcast intro today. Lon, who is Blagoves Taskov?
The master of the GPU.
That's right. That's right. He is.
He knows all things GPU.
He has been hyper-focused on this field. In fact, so much so that recently, Vlado made him the lead developer of the GPU team itself. And that GPU team has grown quite a bit. And we are doing a lot of interesting things on the GPU. So I figured it'd be a good time while I was in Sofia to talk about it. And there's a specific timing that we're happening right now. The reason we're putting it out now is that next week will be the GTC conference over in San Jose, which is the GPU technology conference. And Blag will be there, and Vlado will be there, and all those guys will be there. I will be there, and Stephen Parker will be there. You guys have heard from Stephen a few times. And there's some really interesting things going on. So what are some of your primary questions about GPU, Lon?
How fast can we make it?
Yeah.
How many can we stack together and just make this thing so that rendering time goes away? That's what I want to do.
Okay, that's a good question, but that costs money. So there's a question that we answer is like, what is the cost per core or watts per core, which is actually a very interesting question that Blago brings up. It's like, you got to find value in that. And the fact is, yeah, these GPUs have 3,000 cores, but those are much slower cores than CPUs. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. Actually, sometimes it's actually really good that those cores are very slow. I was fascinated by this part. This is a very granular, down to the atoms level.
Super technical.
Super technical. But
love it.
If you guys are geeky guys like me and Lon and want to hear this kind of crap, this is it. I mean, this is what it's about. We talk about Moore's Law. By the way, a lot of people say Moore's Law is dead. It's not dead.
It's just getting started.
No, yeah. It's, not only is it just getting started, you're right. It's getting like...
Strap in.
Strap in. The fact that you are still adding more processors, we're still adding more stuff to it. It's just not the same way that people have thought. Yes, we can't make CPUs go faster than 4 gigahertz, but we can add a lot more cores. So what does that imply to the overall speed of processing? So really cool stuff. Hopefully you enjoy it. This is, by the way, the introduction to what we're going to be doing, which is going to be the guide to GPU. And we're working on the guide to GPU. Blago and I have been writing it. When we recorded this podcast, we decided we should just write a guide about it. So he and I are working on it, and it's going really hardcore. So look forward to that in the future. And also, a quick note that I will be in Stuttgart in the end of April. So if you guys are in Stuttgart, go check us out over there. We got a booth there. I'll be doing some talks there. Kevin Margo is going to be doing a talk about virtual production on Construct, which will be great. My good friend Dariush will be there as well. He's sitting next to me. So hi, Dariush. So I'm glad to have him there. Hope to see you there. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
So why didn't you want to be on the podcast? Are you terrified of podcasts?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. I'm nervous speaking.
But you're such a good speaker, though.
I'm not.
Why not?
I don't know. I'm stage fright or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But
yeah.
Yeah, but you have stage fright? I saw you over at over at GTC. I could see how you have some stage fright when you presented.
I had a lot.
But you did it anyway, right?
Yeah.
All right. You get over that.
Yeah, I'm trying to fight it, and it works occasionally.
Yeah. Well, you are very great in conversation, so I thought it would be... And since the podcast is a conversation anyway...
Yeah.
So you're doing good at that. All right. Let's go. Let's talk a little bit about about who you are and what you're doing here. So what is your new role now? You have a new role in the company.
Well, yeah. I'm for a few weeks now. I'm officially the team leader of the RTGPU team.
Uh-huh.
Our team grew quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I have to do this now. On top of the dev stuff.
On top of developing. So yeah. Now you're basically the lead developer, shall we say? Can we say that?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. And you've been doing GPU stuff for a long time, right?
Well, yeah. About I joined about 2012, so for 4 years, something like that.
So you've been here. All right. Tell me about your... you told me there's a story which you have saved for me. Your interview story.
Oh, yeah. How I joined. So basically, I was working in a game dev company. We were making game engine and
which engine is that?
Well, it's not popular one. Okay. So it was made for a game that we developed, MMO or RPG.
Uh-huh.
But didn't work quite well. And back then, I have never heard of Chaos Group or V-Ray, but... I had a friend of mine, Boris, but not that Boris, another Boris.
Yes.
Who was really a V-Ray fan and was talking about Chaos Group like all the time. So I was like, okay, I will apply for the job. But back then I didn't met almost any of the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me on the interview anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm going in the interview, and it was Vlado that came in the room.
Yeah.
So because I was searching for a job, I was applying at many companies, and usually your first interview is with an HR guy.
Uh-huh.
So
Vlado, you thought Vlado was the HR guy?
Yeah, and my first question to him was, okay, so you have to tell me how technical should I get so we could understand each other?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you can get as technical as you want. Try your best.
Right.
Yeah. And I remember he was reading my CV, and I was written stuff that I've developed with OpenGL, mood threading, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, tell me what you did, for example, with OpenGL. And I was explaining what I've done with OpenGL, and he was writing with his pen no next to the most of the stuff.
Yeah.
So I've got like 5 no's and 1 yes.
Wow.
And so yeah, that was the first interview.
A little intimidating.
Yes.
So why? So you got hired anyway then?
Yeah, but
even with all the no's.
It was the way it works is that they talk with you for a while, then you get the homework.
Uh-huh.
So we have to implement something home and then bring it over here, and we do a code review with the guys.
Okay.
So I had 2 tasks. I did the first one, and the second one I didn't really did very well, and I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And also working in a game dev company, I could, and I did ask all of my colleagues, come on, somebody has to give me an idea how to do this.
Uh-huh.
But nobody had an idea. I worked a few weeks. I didn't find a good solution. I had one. So mm-hmm. I came to the interview. I showed the first task. I showed the second one. They say the second one is not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't know. And Vlado said, yeah, but you have to do it better. I said, I can't. I even asked everybody. I can't. He said, yeah, but you have to.
Okay.
And I found the solution on the fly talking to them.
Okay. So it dawned on you, and it's like, wait a minute, we can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then during the conversation, I basically found the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, that's how we do it in V-Ray as well.
Okay.
And I think this was, we're seeing how somebody thinks in real life is much more convincing than CVs and stuff.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. It's very different. Obviously, going through interviews and doing stuff is tough. I have some friends of mine who are trying to, back in the day when they're trying to find alternative careers to visual effects, a lot of them were interviewing at Google, and that's like, there is consulting firms for people trying to get interviews at Google, like go through awesome. Interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that I think there's like 5 levels of different parts of the interview
yeah.
and it's all like well documented, and people will consult you and teach you how to go through a Google interview. Yeah,
there are also books about these are the interviews questions that you should know how to answer.
Yeah, and especially for anyone developing, that understanding how to get through, like there's always going to be tasks that you are assigned when you're a developer or someone who's doing stuff, right?
Yeah, but to be honest, I believe that most of these interviews are very old school. Okay. Because they're like tasks, algorithmic tasks that they doesn't really show the way you think or are you creative. They show that you have learned how to solve these particular 10 problems because everybody is asking these particular 10 problems.
Right, right. Yeah. And do they ever do whiteboard coding where you have to like write down the code on the whiteboard or something like that?
Here in KS?
Yeah.
No, the interview is basically we talk with the guys and they do homework and then a code review on a projector.
Okay.
Going through the code and asking questions. Why you did this? Why you did that?
Okay.
So you have time to be calm at home to do the best you can.
So when you got hired, were you immediately assigned to the GPU team?
No, I started actually in the V-Ray for Nuke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I worked on the V-Ray for Nuke for a couple of months, probably 6 or 8 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I was interested in GPUs all the time, and I had mentioned it quite at Vlado, and at some point I got moved to the GPU team.
Okay. Well, that's cool. All right, so we've been discussing GPUs, you and I, for a long time.
Yeah,
several years.
Yeah,
I remember even when I've first started and we were working on the construct stuff and was going through some ideas and Vlado kept talking about Blago, and so I remember hearing your name a lot because you were one of the principal people that created some major changes into the GPU code where it started doing things in an interesting way and solving some interesting problems. And I know that things have changed, are continuing to change, but it was one of the first things that you had, that I remember hearing about you doing, was the ability to parse the code so that you only apply the features that are needed once you start rendering, right?
First, there are the team is a lot of guys, so everybody making a lot of major contributions and changes. So
sure,
but yeah, I also wrote a paper about it. It was we found a way to overcome one of the deficiencies in the GPUs that it happens that if you add too many features, your code
gets slower.
No matter if you use them or not.
Right.
So we used that approach for a few years. Now we have a better one, and we've dropped the old one.
Yeah. Well, of course, you have to continue to adapt things. Now, this has been really interesting. Obviously, we've talked about GPU and understanding GPU. But what I've really liked, and I want to sort of let people know that obviously we're going to try to release this just before GTC. So you're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that people understand what we're doing. And we're also going to hopefully write our guide to GPU as well.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of information that we have in there that we want to sort of get through. And maybe that'll be out by GTC. We'll see. But we'll try to see what we can. If it does, and it'll be shortly after that. But with GTC in mind, I want to sort of go through an overview of, for those people who are interested in GPU stuff, let's start with hardware.
Okay.
Okay. GPU versus CPU. If GPUs are always so darn fast and are so parallel, et cetera, why don't we use GPUs all the time? So there are reasons between the difference between GPU and CPU and what the advantages are. So let's get through that outline.
Okay. So basically, I was wanting to point out that no matter what you do in the universe, there are three ways to get more performance.
Okay.
For example, if you build a house,
if you
paint the walls,
right?
If you want to have more performance from that, you have either to paint faster.
Right.
Or to paint smarter, for example, having a bucket near you, not far away.
Yeah.
Or to get help.
Right.
So you have to do things faster, smarter, or to get help.
Right.
In terms of CPUs and GPUs, faster means higher clock.
Right.
So more gigahertz, for example. Smarter means more caches and better hardware logic and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And getting help means doing stuff in parallel, having more cores, for example.
Right.
And the way hardware works is that it is made from a tiny electronic pieces called transistors.
Right.
So they're like little switches which you can turn on and off.
Yep.
And depending on that, the electricity flows or doesn't.
Right.
So the thing is that if you have more of those on your chip, it's better because you can do more stuff.
Right.
So there is you have heard of the Moore's Law, right?
Of course.
Yeah, Gordon Moore is actually one of the Intel's founders.
Uh-huh.
It's actually not a law, it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because it states that it is first was an observation he made.
Mm-hmm.
So he found out that every N months, 12 or 16 or 24 months or so,
right,
the factories that produce the chips are getting so better that they can put twice more transistors on the chip.
Right.
But it doesn't say anything about the speed or the power.
Right. It just says you can double the transistors.
Double the amount of transistors.
Right. Which is weird that it's called a law, because really all you're talking about is assuming that design functionality continues to go
exactly
at its current
but
rate.
The industry took this as a mark line if they're doing well.
Yeah.
So each and every factory tried to keep up with that.
Right.
For 40 years or something like that.
Right.
So it became self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. They have to, this is our goal, our benchmark is
that's
double
the benchmark.
Yeah. Right.
No matter what, double the amount of transistors, because that's what the law says. You have to do this.
Right.
So, and if you double the amount of transistors, you basically are reducing their size twice.
Right.
And if you reduce their size twice, you can make them twice as fast, because they switch faster.
And there's less distance between the transistors.
Exactly. There's less distance. And because there's less distance, you can feed them less power.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. But here's the thing that at some point around 2005, mm-hmm. you can notice that our CPUs are stopped getting faster on single core performance. They're about capped at 3 or 4 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
Like. And
why is that?
The reason for that is, and the people start saying that the Moore's Law is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. If you see the amount of transistors, it's still continuing to grow.
We're just adding them into other cores.
But we started adding them to other cores because there was a physical phenomenon that people didn't pay attention first. Is that the power used for your processor
mm-hmm.
is two parts, dynamic and static. Okay. Dynamic is when it does stuff.
Yeah.
And static is basically to keep the state or just being turned on,
mm-hmm.
there is some electricity it uses.
Okay.
When you made them smaller and smaller and smaller,
mm-hmm.
if you want to feed them less voltage, the static power starts to be more and more.
Uh-huh.
So we came to the place where static power is so much that if we want to put higher frequency, we can't cool them down.
Okay.
So, but we still have these transistors. Mm-hmm. So the people started making more cores.
Right.
So,
because right now, technically speaking, if we continue Moore's Law, based on the assumption that you said it's transistors amount, mm-hmm. but most people assumed it's speed.
Yeah.
Because the transistor amount used to correlate to speed,
yep.
but now it's going to a different area.
Exactly.
So if we continue to go with the idea that it was speed, we should be at like 11 gigahertz by now.
Actually, at 2001, Intel predicted that at 2010,
yeah.
it will be 10 gigahertz CPU.
Right.
But you didn't.
Clearly it's not.
clearly it's not.
Can you imagine a heat sink on a 10 gigahertz?
Yeah, and actually, if you have, I've done the math once, if you want a 100 gigahertz CPU,
yeah,
the biggest distance that you can travel if you want to be at 100 gigahertz is 2 millimeters. Can you imagine that cooling a 2 millimeter? Because of the speed of light.
Right.
You're capped by the speed of light. So multiplied by a coefficient.
So you can't physically get there because the speed of light is too... Yeah. Yeah.
When we did the construct tests, we had some servers back in LA and working here from Sofia.
Yeah.
And Nicole actually did the calculations, and it was that because of the speed of light, the least latency you can get is about 100 milliseconds. that's not good.
Yeah.
it's a lot, and it's if everything else is perfect.
In an ideal world would know. Yeah, well, that's when we were trying to transfer the information back and forth over the cloud, right? That 100,
if there were no routers, switches, and stuff like that.
Yeah, just a pure fiber optic cable between us and hanging from the bathroom, straight as an arrow, no bends. But you could still, the latency is fine because you could, but if the server is next to you, then obviously that gets much shorter.
Yeah, of course. This is like the worst case scenario.
But you could still observe it just with 100 millisecond latency, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you could still observe it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's a different story. But all right. So basically now you cannot actually go faster than about the speed we are anymore.
Oh, there is the famous paper saying that the free lunch is over.
Right.
Because before that, you write the free lunch for developers actually is over. Because before 2005, you could just write a single threaded program, and it get faster by itself.
Right.
And now that's not the case.
Everything has to be multi-threaded.
Everything has to be multi-threaded. And so faster, smarter, and get help.
Mm-hmm.
Faster is over.
Yep.
Smarter actually accidentally also went over in 2005, around that.
Caches? Because,
they help to some extent. And from then on, they're not helping so much. And there are other stuff like complex logic that can be implemented in hardware, which can give you benefit to some point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was depleted in 2005.
Right.
So you used to get about 100% speed improvements from smarter.
Mm-hmm.
You used to get...
Level 1 cache, level 2 cache.
Yeah, and there are stuff like predictors for branches, all crazy stuff, but they're still there. They're helping.
Yep.
But that's it. They're not helping more than they did before because they're so optimized now that. So before that, you get about 70-100% per year speed up on single core. Now you have about 5 to 10.
Uh-huh.
But the multi-core still scales.
Right.
And it's still getting. Will it scale infinitely? No. Because nothing in the universe
after a while you
exponentially and infinitely.
Sure.
So at one point, I think that it's about. So the technology now is 14 nanometers, and I think that a size of an atom is about half a nanometer, near 1 nanometers.
Uh huh.
So you're capped by the size of the atoms as well.
Right. Yeah, so there's only so you can't split the atoms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mhm. Yes. I remember this, you know, okay, so I don't know if you know this. I used to work at the nanotechnology lab at Rice University. I came from the architecture school, but I was one of the only guys that knew a lot about visualization, and so the now technology lab at Rice, Richard Smalley had just won the Nobel Prize for the Buckyball research that he did. So he was at Rice, and so I worked in his lab, and so I accidentally learned a whole lot about like super small like nanotubes and all that stuff. So I learned a lot about the size of stuff, and it's kind of crazy how it's stuff that I realized, like, oh, that's so small. It's like, but it needs to be smaller. Like it's kind of sucks that we're stuck, like an atom. It's like you almost wish that an atom could be smaller to do certain things. And I didn't know that that would actually eventually happen on that stuff. So at this point, yeah, you can only fit so many transistors in there, right?
Yeah. And about the difference between the CPUs and the GPUs is that the CPUs were designed and made for low latency.
Okay.
So and the GPUs are made for
massive parallel.
For massive parallel and high throughput. So if you for example, if you have two towns A and B, you all want to go to from town A to town B. Mm-hmm. If latency is, if you have one car, after how much time it will be at town B, mm-hmm. and it's like, what's the speed limit of the road? Mm-hmm. And throughput is how many cars can you deliver in that amount of time.
Right.
So you can imagine that the GPUs being many lanes road.
Yeah.
But many, many, many lanes road.
Right.
With a low speed limit. Mm-hmm. So they're good for stuff where, for problems where you have many tasks to do.
Right.
And in nature and in computer science, it happens that there are a lot of tasks that are single-threaded. And you can't find many parallel stuff to do.
Because it depends, the next task you need to do depends on the task you just are waiting for. Yeah. So I know that as an example, it used to be a huge problem. And I guess there's been smarter ways to work, but it used to be a huge problem with fluid simulation because you have to know where you came from in order to go where you're going. So you can't, it's a one person task, right?
Yep.
So, and then the reason the GPU, this is Vlado's thing, we talked about it before, but the reason the GPU is was used, because that's the thing, right? Why is it called a GPU?
Yeah.
It's called a GPU, it's called a graphic processing unit. So it was originally developed for a way to get a lot of pixels on a screen. And there's that's a lot of, you can think of each pixel as a task.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works.
Right.
So there are tasks which are the opposite of the single-threaded nature of the other task, which are called embarrassingly parallel.
Embarrassingly parallel?
Yeah, but it's actually a good thing.
Okay.
It's good to be embarrassingly parallel. Those tasks that take almost no effort to get to do in parallel.
Okay.
Ray tracing is such a task because the rays, they do not depend on each other.
Yeah.
So you can...
Some of them don't even intersect. I mean, they only intersect each other.
They don't intersect each other.
They intersect other things.
Yeah,
but
they intersect other things. So you can think it's really easy just to ray trace each ray on a separate core. Mm-hmm. So for embarrassingly parallel tasks, GPUs are well suited because they have a lot of cores. And the thing is that if you give the GPU a small amount of tasks, mm-hmm. it will, for example, give you the answer in some amount of time.
Yep.
And if you give it many tasks, it will give you the answer probably in the same amount of time.
Okay.
So the way to efficiently use GPUs is to have to feed it with a lot of tasks all the time.
Right.
Because
otherwise it's just a bunch of cars in a parking lot.
Yeah, it is many lanes road with one car going on it slowly.
Yeah. So you're saying that basically the actual... So some of these new GPUs, like, you know, CPUs right now, are, you know, let's say they have 6 or 8 processors or cores. Which you can think of as a separate processor in a sense. In the old days, it used to be. But they're called cores. And they used to be, you know, for a long time, like you said, before 2005, they were always one core. Then they didn't bothered with that. GPUs have a lot more. Obviously, some of the top-end GPUs that we're seeing from, you know, AMD and NVIDIA, they're like, what, 3,000 cores or more?
Well, it depends how do you count them. Because, you can say they're 3,000, but you can say they're less.
Okay. It's certain things are counted twice, or
yeah, or 32 times. It depends.
Okay, all right.
So it is not really clearly what's a core.
Oh, okay.
Because if you have many shared logic, they can do only the same stuff. Blah blah blah. It's controversial what's a core, but we can use the
analogy.
The analogy that the hardware vendors are using, can call them 3000.
Okay. But there's a lot of them, and they're not as power. Each core is not as powerful as a CPU.
Yeah, each core is many times less powerful than a CPU.
Okay.
But you remember we pointed that we can't cool the CPUs now, and that's because that's why we kept the frequency.
Right.
So being less powerful as a core actually can be a good thing, because you're not using that much power.
Okay.
And if you're not using that much power, you're more power efficient.
Right.
So and this is like the most important stuff.
Okay.
Now. And basically it's somewhere between 150 and 250 watts.
Okay.
And it's all about how much calculations you can do for those.
Per watt.
Yeah. And actually, there is interesting, I don't know if we want to get that technical.
No, we can, but we have a lot to cover, so but go ahead.
Yeah, okay, that's for example, it's about how many picojoules are used to get a floating point operation.
Okay.
So, just a quick one. If you want to do it low latency, mm-hmm. it's about 1,000.
Okay.
If you want to do it on a GPU, it's about 100.
Mm-hmm.
So it costs like 10 times
less.
So being low latency costs occasionally.
Right.
And if you implement it in hardware, so if you're not doing it with software, but if you do it in hardware, it costs 10.
Right.
So that's amount how power efficient
could
GPUs be, but not for every task. Sometimes it can be the other way around.
Okay. Well, all right. Now I'm going to go into some software stuff with you. So we've established the fact that the hardware is very, very the field has changed in hardware. We've reached a certain threshold with the CPU, which still serves a very big purpose in calculations, obviously. Not everything can be done on GPU, but the GPU has an advantage that certain things can do, right? Now suddenly the GPU is doing things, because it was always doing graphics, right?
Yep,
it has a VGA port out of the back of it all the time. But now suddenly it can be used as something that does calculations, right?
Yeah, they call it general purpose.
General purpose, yeah. Right? And in fact, NVIDIA even makes graphics cards that don't have any video out of them.
Yeah.
They're just used for calculations. So now that you have these new GPUs doing calculations, you have to give them the ability to do those. So you have to develop a language for them, right?
Yeah, you have. Actually, it's a whole technology stack of stuff that you have to have.
Right.
It's not only the language.
Right.
So you have to have a lot of stuff, and basically they started making those in 2007, 2008,
I think.
Before that, people used to do GPU or general purpose GPU programs, mm-hmm. hacking it with shaders. So basically, you're storing in each and every pixel information that when you read on the GPU, you rasterize that on the screen.
Okay.
You're not actually doing rasterization, but you have coded inside the shader what you're tricking GPU to do other stuff that then it gets.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So they wrote these languages, I guess, or the languages.
Yeah.
So two of them came out around that time.
Yeah, it's
OpenCL and CUDA, right?
Yeah.
2000. This was in 2006,
2007? I'm not sure.
Maybe 2007, because it wasn't very long after that suddenly V-Ray came out with his GPU renderer.
Yeah.
It was around 2008, I think it came out. So V-Ray has been doing this for a long time in terms of the history of GPU rendering, mm-hmm. right? One of the first probable GPU renderers out there.
Yeah, the project was started by a colleague of mine, Diro, who still works here.
Yeah.
And it doing with working with such new technology is not necessarily really fun.
No.
Because it's yeah. being young, it has issues and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Trust me, I'm trying to do stuff with VR and it's hard. There's just nothing that's, even though everyone's talking about how awesome it is and how great it is, it's like, yeah, but if you really want to do something with it, it's yeah. really hard.
Yeah.
But I remembered it was, so I remember the excitement of it because I remember I was there during the announcement of it, okay?
Yeah.
And the way it happened was it was in Santa Monica, and they were doing some event. I think Maria had just started at yeah. Chaos Group, so the old school before they had a proper marketing person like Maria working there. It was just like Vlado and Peter would show up, and they, you know, it was a little bit haphazard. Suddenly, we showed up at this event, and it's nice. There's like little goodie bags down, and there's like little treats, and there's a buffet and beers and stuff for us. So it was like, wow, what happens? Like Maria like put a nice face on Chaos Group. It was really good. But anyways, they had this beast machine that they called it the beast. I think there was this massive thing they were showing, doing all their demos with, and it was looking pretty cool. And they're showing the new features of V-Ray, which was great. And then Peter said, "What if I told you that I could render something about 20 times faster?" And he's like, and everyone, I think it was Greg Sedila said, "Go on." And he says, "All right, I'm going to bring out this other machine." And he brought out like this crappy machine, you know, this old, like something like, it's like, this is like a, you know, $1,000 machine with, you know, a normal graphics card in it. The graphics card is the key here. And he put it up and then he saw stuff rendering, you know, 20 times faster yeah. or something like that. And it blew everyone's mind. It's like, oh my God, is it CUDA? Are you guys using this CUDA thing we've been hearing about? And he said, no, we're using OpenCL because we want yes. to be, so the first versions were using OpenCL. Yes. They wanted to be open to any graphics processor. And then they started developing for CUDA as well at the yep. time, right? So tell me a little bit about those two things, because I didn't know much about OpenCL and CUDA, but tell me the difference between those two things.
So CUDA is a proprietary technology from NVIDIA, mm-hmm. and now AMD are trying to get support for it as well.
Okay.
But you can think, and OpenCL is just an open standard. It has a public specification, and everybody can do its own implementation.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably can think of OpenCL for like something like HTML.
Okay.
You have different implementations, which for HTML are called browsers,
mm-hmm.
and for OpenCL are drivers from different hardware manufacturers.
Okay.
Which do drivers for their hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So for OpenCL, you have different implementations from mm-hmm. different vendors, and CUDA is pretty much the same, but
it's proprietary.
It's proprietary, and it being proprietary allows the vendors to change it more easily.
Right.
Because otherwise, you have to go to a committee, you have to convince people that.
Right.
So, being able to change it with less hassle allows them to add features.
Gotcha.
Quickly.
Okay.
So you can think of...
So the advantages of OpenCL is that it basically, it will work on any piece of hardware.
Yeah.
And the advantage of CUDA is that, for NVIDIA in this case, the advantage of CUDA is that they can customize it more for their specific needs.
Absolutely.
Okay. And these are basically languages that are used for, that you guys use to write your software in.
So, yeah, basically we have to rewrite everything from scratch to make it in an efficient way.
Yeah, you're doing a completely different type of rendering.
So, yeah, we are doing another render engine.
It's completely different.
It's almost doesn't share any code.
Right. But okay, it doesn't share any code in terms of the actual rendering process. Now, but here's the difference that I think that... That happens in V-Ray compared to other rendering solutions is that we, as a user, it's just a different option.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I know that's a kind of a thing, that it's a different option for us, which allows us to say, using the V-Ray, I already know that I've been using for years or still use for CPU, I can use pretty much the same shaders to go yeah. not the GPU. We can talk about why there's differences between those things, which is fine. But there are. This is allowing us a much more flexible workflow. CPU, GPU, same V-Ray, technically speaking. But it actually is a completely different rendering engine.
Yeah.
Now, there's an important part of this, which I want you to explain, that obviously getting different hardware, different GPUs, will affect your performance, right? There's only so much you can... You know, certain cars can do a, my laptop has a NVIDIA GPU in it. It's pretty good. It's got 1,000 cores, but it is a mobile device, so it's probably slower.
Yeah.
And it's got a bunch of other things that are going on. Obviously, if I'm going to get an M6000, it's going to get the most performance I can get out of a GPU right now, right? So, but there's another portion of it, and it's the drivers. So explain to me how the graphics driver affects the performance and the functionality of your GPU.
Probably it's pretty apparent now that if you open different websites in different browsers, they could be rendered differently.
Right.
So the driver is your browser.
The driver is your browser.
Yeah. For CUDA and OpenCL. Okay. Basically, when you have a CPU application, you have your application, then you have the operating system, and then you have the hardware.
Right.
For a GPU, you have your GPU, then you have the driver.
Okay.
Then you have part of the operating system, and then you have the hardware.
Okay.
So the driver is a piece of software that takes your GPU code and gives it to the hardware.
Okay.
But besides only giving it, it also does a lot of complex stuff.
So you can think of it as the operating system of the...
That's how they call it now. It's so complex, and it is so sophisticated that... It is almost a separate operating system.
Okay.
For GPUs.
Okay. That's the best analogy I've heard so far.
Yeah.
And it's very important. Obviously, your OS has to be fast, functional, and do all its things, right? Yes. So it gets updated constantly to incorporate different things or functionalities that are involved and make sure it works. Now, for a long time, we have still... we've supported CUDA obviously very well, and we've been doing CUDA development for our GPU rendering, but we also have OpenCL right, and we've had the same stuff for a while, right?
Well, they have almost the same functionality. There are some stuff that are CUDA only.
Okay,
but only few of them.
Okay, now what? Why recently, obviously, we've changed. We've been able to render on OpenCL much more using the AMD processors recently too, right?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how that happened.
Well, as you probably know, I'm very interested in how hardware works.
Yeah.
So we had that our OpenCL kernels did not work probably at all on AMD GPUs for certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So there was no obvious reason why.
Okay.
So I tried to find it. So I learned how their hardware is implemented. I checked how their drivers work, and I basically found a way to make it work.
Okay.
So that's the story.
But their drivers had changed somewhat.
There is something called processor architecture.
Yes.
Which actually is people are not familiar with it, because your desktops or laptops are using something called x86, invented by Intel, and it's not changing that much. It's not changing at all.
Okay.
But in your phone has something different called ARM.
Mm-hmm.
And the GPUs, they change this architecture every few years.
Oh, so they change their architecture completely.
So because there are no old apps that have to run on the new GPUs, or the driver can recompile it, they're allowed to change it completely.
Okay.
So, and they do.
They do.
Yeah. And AMD used a completely different approach to hardware, which changed in 2011.
Okay.
So basically, they had to write completely new drivers.
Right.
And of course, with everything new, it happens that it has issues in the beginning, and but now they're very good.
Yeah. So there was certain part of their drivers were not compatible with OpenCL calculations, yeah, or something like that, and then we were one. They've now since fixed those issues.
Yeah.
And now basically, we're able to render on AMD processors again.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting, because that basically means that our code, our rendering, V-Ray will work on any GPU, including AMD processors.
Actually, V-Ray will work on any hardware supporting OpenCL.
Any hardware supporting
OpenCL. It doesn't have to be GPU.
Right. And it'll also work on CUDA as well.
And it works very well and very fast on CUDA.
Right. So CUDA is still probably our pixel for pixel, our fastest code at this point, right?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, which is really interesting. So, but you still have the option to use OpenCL.
Yeah, you have the option to use OpenCL. Right. And as I said, there are different implementations, and there are actually OpenCL implementations for CPUs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is implementation from Intel and AMD as well.
Oh.
So you can install OpenCL implementation for your CPU,
okay,
and you can use the CPU and the GPU.
Interesting.
You can. We shouldn't call them GPUs, but OpenCL devices. That's the appropriate
devices. Okay.
Yeah, the politically correct.
All right. Okay. Well, this is really cool. So now I've got a good understanding. We've got our GPUs. We got our drivers that are working on the GPUs, and we've got everything else working. So what's the next steps here? There's a couple other things that I want to talk about, because there's still a few things that people will be aware of. Memory.
Yeah.
So memory, obviously, on the CPU, you can add infinite memory.
Yeah.
Right? Your RAM, right?
Yeah.
That holds this information. And it doesn't matter. You can just continue to add it, et cetera, et cetera. I guess it's a limitation of the OS or something at some point of how much memory can actually be in there. But that can actually be changed as well. For the GPU, the memory is actually a kind of a special memory, right?
Yeah, the GPUs, they're like a different computer inside your computer.
Right.
They have their operating system. They have their own processors.
Right.
They have their own memory.
Right.
And if you want your GPU to work fast, you have to use only the memory, which is, well, it's true for all types of computing, that the closest the memory is to you,
right,
the fastest it works.
Right. It's the same thing as we were talking about, this the latency.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So basically, it is important because it defines how much stuff you can fit in your scene.
Right. Basically. Okay, and so now here's the thing. So the memory's close to you.
Yeah.
Right? So you know, and it's very fast memory on the GPU, right? And but the problem is it was pretty much capped at 4 gigs for a long time for most things. Now they've got up to 12, you know, it's 6, 8, and 12 gigs. 12 gigs is a lot for a GPU, but for people in visual effects, that's nothing. People use 64 gigs, 128 gigs all the time.
And
so why is it so hard to get that much more memory on a GPU? And why is it so expensive?
First of all, there are ways to do something called out-of-core rendering, reduce the memory needed for your scene.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it at the last GTC.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it again, this one.
Okay.
And we have some stuff working.
Okay, but before we get that, let's just explain to people like why you have to hold the whole scene in your memory.
Yeah.
Right? So that memory, but why is it the GPU memory is so expensive?
Is it?
It is. Why would I pay so much more for 12 gigs than I did pay for 4 gigs?
I don't know. You have to ask the GPU vendors.
Okay. Good. But they all right. So that's an issue, and I want to know why that doesn't work. But here's another problem, okay? And then I kind of know the answer to this, but I want you to explain it to it.
Yeah.
So we know that since it's already massively parallel, right?
Yeah.
And we can use all these cores. The other cool thing is if I have two video cards, I can get twice the performance, almost twice the performance,
yeah,
right? Or actually very, 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 very close to twice the performance.
It is, I've measured it with 8 GPUs.
Yeah.
It was, V-Ray was 7.94%.
Yeah. So, it is so close to 100, very
you
massive.
You can say it is absolutely scales linearly.
Right.
2 GPUs, 2 times faster.
But well, here's my problem, right? I don't have 8 times the memory. I have the same amount of memory for your card. So you can't use any other memory.
Yeah.
And then you can basically each card has to hold the scene on its own in each card. And is that because transferring that memory from one to the next slows down the
render?
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. Just the same way. So the other thing that you talked about last GTC is transferring that texture or whatever extra memory to the system RAM.
Yeah.
But that is a very slow process compared to everything else. Yeah. So that's the whole talk that you were talking about out of core and how to be efficient with it, right? Yes. So that's your bucket scenario, right? Your bucket of pain problem, right? So you were trying to make your bucket as efficient and smart as possible, but at the same time you're like you want as fast as possible, right? So you're not willing to settle for a bucket situation.
for the GPUs, the NVIDIA or have this thing called NVLink, which basically should...
But that doesn't exist yet, right? It's coming.
It's coming in the next architecture, which should be this summer.
Right.
Which should allow the communication between GPUs to happen faster.
Faster. Fast enough? That's the remains to be seen.
There is only one way to tell if it's going to be fast enough.
But if you use NVLink, right... Yeah. That means that now that the memory can be shared between two GPUs. Now, so in an ideal situation, let's assume it's just as fast. Okay, you can laugh.
Okay,
let's pretend that it's just as fast. If you have two 12 gig cards, now suddenly your memory pool is 24 gigs.
Yeah, if we assume that.
Okay, or... Okay, you sacrifice 25% speed, but you get twice the memory.
I cannot tell.
No, but that would be like less. If okay, I'm being whatever, less idealistic.
Yeah.
Okay, but we don't know. The only way we're going to know is when we test it.
It is an interesting new stuff to test.
Right. Okay. So quick preview of why something new you were talking about. You and I were talking about it yesterday. Something new is happening in 2016.
Yeah, you see that the Moore's law with the n months and the size of transistors.
Yeah.
Well, the last time GPU actually both biggest vendor GPU and NVIDIA and AMD, they don't have their own factories for producing transistors.
Right.
Chips. So they're using third-party companies.
Right.
So from it, they're just making the architecture. And then they're other guys producing the actual chips.
Right.
So it does not depend only on them when they will change to smaller transistors.
Right.
And the last time they did was long time ago.
Okay.
Many more months than the Moore's law predicts.
Right.
So finally, in the summer of 2016, NVIDIA and AMD will introduce new GPUs, which also they're catching up. Some from 28, they are not going to 22, but directly on 14 and 16.
What do you mean, 28 nanometers?
Nanometers.
So that's the thickness of the chip?
That's the size of the transistor we can think of.
Okay, so you're going from a 28 nanometer transistor. And on the CPU, it just kept getting slightly smaller.
CPU was keeping up. The CPUs were 28, then they were 22, now they're 14. Even the CPUs in your phone are 14, but the GPUs were 28 all this time.
And so now suddenly they're going to a much smaller one.
So they're going to a much smaller one, and also they have they'll have new improvements in the technology other than the size, which are making them more power efficient.
Okay,
so they can pull even more stuff.
So they're smaller. We've established it. Making them smaller allows you to go... Several options happen when you go smaller. You can go faster or you can add more cores.
Yeah.
So which one are they doing?
No, they're adding cores.
They're adding a lot more cores.
Yeah. And there's... on top of that...
Yeah.
So these are exciting news, which have good potential of giving good performance benefits. And on top of that, it is... You know, there's a guy named Bill DeLee, who mm-hmm. works at NVIDIA. He does a lot of talks for GPUs. He likes to say that calculation units are like kids.
Uh-huh.
They're easy to make and hard to feed. So you can put a lot of calculation units. That's easy.
Yeah.
But you have to feed them data.
Yes.
Because if you don't have data to operate on, they're useless.
Right.
So another very important thing for hardware is how much data can you get to your cores per second?
Okay.
So if you put more cores, you need to feed more data.
Yeah. Now you just have a whole lot of kids.
Yeah. And this amount of bytes per core per second mm-hmm. actually got worse and worse during the last years.
Ah.
Because the memory technology haven't evolved
okay.
almost at all.
So now the memory technology is changing.
Yes. This summer, we will have something called stacked memory.
Whatever. Oh, right.
The HBM stuff.
I remember this from last GTC when they announced it
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
So this is they called it like 3D memory or something?
Yeah, it is 3D memory.
So before, memory was basically two-dimensional, where it's just arrays on a two-dimensional grid, in a sense,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
And then the 3D memory basically stacks
them
on top, and then they can communicate back, up and down as well.
That's
as
right.
side to
That's
side, right. left, right, and yeah. top, bottom.
This is extremely hard to do, to produce those, because
sure.
stacking them sounds easy, but I think they're 1,000 degrees hot or something like that. It's tricky
yeah.
to implement, but this will also raise the data that you can feed to your... And it's also more power efficient.
It's more power efficient and it's faster, but it sounds expensive.
What I'm hearing is that probably it won't be cheap in the beginning. But the good thing is that you can put, when you have one on top of the other, you can have more memory. Like you
right.
can go 32 gigabytes, something like that.
Right, because now you just increased your...
Yeah, and also the size of the GPUs should be reduced before that you had this memory around the processor.
Yeah.
And now they're in one inside the processor, so the GPU can be smaller.
Oh, and that's going to make your latency even shorter.
Yes, it will.
So this is good all around.
Yeah.
So you're predicting, okay, I'm not going to hold you to this. And so, and no one should hold you to this.
Yeah.
But let's assume currently on a current chip that you have today, let's mm-hmm. say a Titan X or whatever it is, how much faster do you think, what would you think the new chips would be? How much faster do you think they'll be?
I cannot tell. Well, doing benchmarks and predictions is a tricky thing.
Sure.
And people almost all the time doing it wrong.
Yes.
From example, comparing CPU versus GPU renders should be done considering how expensive is the CPU, how expensive is the GPU, how much
power
it needs and stuff like that should be considered. There are benchmarks and predictions done by, let's say, NVIDIA saying that the current Titan X and M6000 are about 6 or 7 teraflops.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there are rumors that the next big GPU will be around 12, probably 14, something like that.
Okay.
Probably twice.
That's a big jump.
But we have to test it. No,
no, of course. And it, like you said, it's like if you can't feed it enough information.
Yeah, there are a million things that can go better or worse than that.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, that's very, very exciting. What do you think some of the best things about V-Ray's GPU solutions are? What do you think some of the real advantages are?
Well, first, probably it supports almost everything from V-Ray.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to convert your scene. You don't have to change your workflow. You can just render out of the box.
Right. Well, that's definitely an advantage. Let's see. What's another good thing about it? And oh, you, in terms of the artiness of it, this is something else I think is really cool, especially for people doing look depth, et cetera, is that it actually has a lot of on-the-fly updates, right?
Our integration allows to change absolutely everything in the scene.
And still continue to render.
And still continue to render and see the results immediately.
Right. So if you know other solutions, if you add a light or add some geometry, you have to stop the render and start it over again.
It is tricky to make it to work in all cases.
Right.
Yeah.
But with V-Ray, you can add a light, yeah. You can add geometry, you can move geometry, move camera. But a lot of things can be done to the scene and it will continue to progressively render.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is pretty cool. I think that's a really good advantage as well. And then... Okay, what's the one thing? Okay, what can you give us a taste? I know you're going to be presenting at GTC. Can you give us a taste of what you're going to be talking about at GTC?
It's going to be much more technical than even this.
this is arguably one of the most technical podcasts I've ever had. Which, by the way, is fine. I love it. So,
I don't know. We're going to talk about, you know, after all, GPUs are made for real-time rendering. They're hardware specifically designed for games. Mm-hmm. And running general-purpose, basically parallel general-purpose application works. Mm-hmm. But there are some caveats.
Okay.
So you have to hack it.
Okay.
At a few places. And there are different ways to do that, giving different benefits.
Okay.
So we're researching all the possible crazy stuff that we can think of. Mm-hmm. And we are going, as the last year, present the results of those research.
Okay. Being too vague. No, it's fine. It's all good. I think we'll put it in and we'll definitely have more information about the stuff in the guide when we write our guide.
Absolutely.
To GPU stuff. So that's been really cool. I don't know. I think it's pretty exciting stuff. I think the GPU is very interesting. I think that the way that people use it, people have gotten so used to using CPU rendering that they're having a hard time sometimes thinking about GPU rendering.
Yeah.
But we've seen some incredible results. I think the construct stuff is incredible.
Yeah, it is.
And it's very clear. Here's the problem. It's the problem with everything, right? Because it becomes so massively fast, you do things that you never would think of doing.
Yeah.
Like in Construct, everything has depth of field rendered in real depth of field for everything. So that's kind of opens up the door to it. But, you know, if you look at Construct and you look at the way it was shot, it looks so much more photoreal because there is no compromises, right?
Yeah.
On some of that. One quick thing. It's a side note. Tell me about some of the GI problems, because that was, remember we were talking about GI and how GI for most calculations in GI are brute force for GPU.
Yeah.
And why, you know, light cache and all those stuff. How we support light cache information. How you do GI calculations in on GPU and why it's a problem or sometimes.
Basically, for the GI solutions and the GPU, you have brute force, of mm-hmm. course, and we have light cache.
Right.
And light cache probably some of the stuff that you could do better on a CPU than a GPU.
Okay.
So, but the CPU helps the GPU in making the light caching RT.
Right.
So we support both of those.
Okay. Well, that allows us to do a lot more GI, right? Because brute force gets slower and slower and slower the more bounces you add. But light cache allows for the secondary arrays to be a lot more secondary arrays you can calculate.
That's right.
All right. Well, it's cool. I'm going to, I'm looking forward to seeing you again in San
over?
Jose. Yeah, we're almost quick. You think so? Because it's been 1 hour.
1 hour, okay.
Is there stuff you wanted to add?
Not
really.
I don't know. No.
You can add. I can keep going, man.
Oh no, we. I just wanted to point out that we have pretty neat documentation on our webpage that people tend to not know this.
Okay. Well, we will put that on the podcast stuff.
Yeah.
On the links, but tell us what's in there that's important.
You can see the FAQ of the GPU find how to load balance so your computer can work as RTGPU is rendering.
Mm-hmm.
Your UI doesn't, how to prevent UI becoming, here's the thing that the CPUs are really good at task switching.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give a lot of tasks to the GPU,
mm-hmm.
it won't have time to render the UI, the operating system. There's a way to prevent that.
Okay.
So we have this, we have supported features list.
Okay.
And many other time savers for...
Okay.
I believe.
So the documentation on GPU is something cool. So let's make sure, write a note there to make sure you email me that list so that I can put it on the podcast page. Cool. All right. And I really appreciate it. This has been good. Oh, didn't you say you have an idea for the closing statement?
At least for we can say, you know, a flop is floating operation per, which tells you how many numbers you can.
A floating point operation.
Floating point operation can you per second. Well, we can do, may the flops be with you.
May the really?
Yeah.
That's your thought? May the flops be with you?
Yeah.
Okay. I will put that into the consideration size, but I, for now, we will say, may the flops be with you.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Plago. All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.